by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. When the young woman or when the young man, sometimes you got to take a stand. Just because you think you can, you got to run, you got to run. When the young woman or when the young man, sometimes you got to take a stand. Just because you think you can, you got to run, you got to run, run. Crying against the odds, you're in a trance. Say, who did you think you are to have a chance? You're a no one. Your face come and go ain't in all the sun, so you better hang on and hey, you better run, cause here's your chance and your race has begun. Down in a hole, you feel like two different people in your soul. Feel like a loser until you see that as you bend, you learn to be your own best friend. And you learn how and you learn when to take a chance on the spirit of the wind. Today's show intro was You Got to Run by Buffy St. Marie and Tanya Tagak. Unceded Airwaves broadcasts every week from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Autumn Chanel Vilji, Chief Jim Cooey, Janet Cooey, Shadeji, and Dringweezy. I'm Treaty 11 Gwich'in and Inuvialuit on my mother's side, and I was born and raised on Treaty 6 territory in Amaskwatiwaskayagin, and that is traditional lands of the Cree, Métis, Nakota Sioux, and Soto peoples. I acknowledge that I was an uninvited guest there for the first 17 years of my life, and now I'm living here on unceded, ancestral, and traditional lands of Coast Salish people, living and learning from Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Musqueam lands, and I'm really grateful to be here. I've been here for my first year of university here at UBC, and it's been really great. Do you want to introduce yourself, Mel?
Absolutely. So I'm Melissa Haberl. I am a settler of German and Austrian descent, and I grew up on the traditional and ancestral lands of the Mi'kmaq peoples of Epiquet, also known as Prince Edward Island. I've been living here on Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh lands for about 6 years. I'm graduating this year from the First Nations Indigenous Studies Department and the History Department here at UBC, and I'm very grateful to be here today.
Congrats, Mel.
Thanks. Feels crazy.
Do you want to introduce yourself, Maddie?
Yes. Tansay Madison Singh Sigasayan. My name is Madison Singh. I am Cree from the Mixu Cree First Nation on my mom's side, and I'm Punjabi on my dad's side. I'm originally from Northern Alberta Treaty 8 territory, but I've been living here for about 2 years now on unceded Coast Salish territory, and I acknowledge that I'm an uninvited guest, and I'm so grateful to be here.
Lovely. So we want to thank our sponsors, Decolonizing Water and NORAD Electric. You're listening to Season 3, Episode 25 of Unceded Airwaves. We made it through 25 whole episodes. And today we have a podcast episode for you all. We are going to be airing two podcasts, both made by Indigenous Collective members. The first one is made by Nikita Day and Emily Irvine about the Queer Arts Festival happening here in Vancouver from June 16th to 28th, 2018. And then we will be airing a podcast made by me, Autumn Schnell, the Indigenous Collective Coordinator, about Indigenous feminisms that was released in the Carving Space and Indigenous Radio Doc series. But before we get into it, let's set our intention for the day. So we are the Indigenous Radio Collective. Every week we discuss Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment. We are a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students who use our weekly airtime for our own self-representation.
We strive to center Indigenous voices on our show and to build narratives that empower Indigenous people. Unceded Airwaves is our opportunity to share and define the diversity of Indigenous cultures and highlight some influential Indigenous people.
If you can relate to the goals of the show and are wondering how to get involved, please reach out. You can always reach us on our social media. We've got Facebook and Twitter. If you have a voice for decolonization, then we want to hear from you.
Everyone is welcome, and there is no experience necessary. Our weekly meeting is every Wednesday at 1 p.m. at CITR in the lower level of the Nest. And if you want to get involved but don't want to be on air, there are plenty of other ways to participate in this collective.
You can follow Unceded Airwaves on Facebook and Twitter. If you're aware of a great Indigenous artist, send us a tweet using the hashtag #UncedMusic or send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves, and we'll do our best to get it on air. And if we play a song you send us, we will even give you a shout-out.
We're always looking to hear from our listeners about what you're up to, so let us know about any Indigenous artists that you're into right now and what events you're attending or promoting. As always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show.
She hid him in her bones. I'm lying down flat on my back on the ice of Chemung. The wind is water falling over my frame, borrowing the parts I can't hang on to. He tells me he wants to die really slowly so he doesn't miss anything. I tell him I'm not that brave. I want to miss everything. The ice wind is singing a single suspended note with no phrasing, no breath, and a benevolent intensity. He talks about disconnecting slowly, a methodic retreat into the background. In a different breath, he talks about fighting like hell to the end of everything. The hole in the ice is healing into slush, and the line is starting to freeze. I make the inside wind and the outside breath the same temperature. He's reading the signs and forecasting tomorrow. I'm taking inventory of unasked questions, wondering which holds the most regret. He starts the truck and tells me to get in. I say I'll walk. He nods, shuts the door, and then drives off the ice, stopping to wait until I turn towards the shore.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves. The time is 2:11 p.m. And the song you just heard was She Hid Him in Her Bones by Leanne Simpson and Nick Ferrero. Next, we have a podcast made by Nikita Day and Emily Irvine about the Queer Arts Festival happening here in Vancouver, featuring everything from visual arts to literary art, media, and Satellite Academy from, I believe it was June 16th to 28th, 2018. These two did this for their gender, race, and social justice practicum. So here is what Emily and Nikita had to say.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. My name is Nikita Day.
And my name is Emily Irvine. And in this show, we will be exploring the ways in which art can implement social change through representation, community building, and collaboration. We will be exploring specifically the Queer Arts Festival run by the Pride and Arts Society.
This artist-run, multidisciplinary festival happens every summer in Vancouver. Each year, the festival theme ties together a curated visual art exhibition, performing arts series, workshops, artist talks, panels, and media art screenings.
The Queer Art Festival's programming has garnered wide acclaim and is recognized as one of the top five festivals of its kind worldwide.
Today, we're going to be talking to Samantha Nock, who was last year's literary curator at the Queer Arts Festival Unsettled. We will also be speaking to Valerie D. Walker, who is this year's visual arts curator for the Queer Arts Festival's 10th anniversary, Decadence.
To introduce ourselves further, we are both fourth-year students majoring in gender, race, sexuality, and social justice at the University of British Columbia.
Yeah, so I'm Nikita, and I am Taltan from the Telegraph Creek Reservation in northern BC, but I've been living and learning here as an uninvited guest on Musqueam territory for about 4 years now.
I'm Emily, and I'm a settler from Salmon Arm, BC, Shuswap territory, and I've been studying for the last 2 years on unceded Musqueam territory.
So for the past few months, we have been unpacking what an event like the Queer Arts Festival means to us and to others. So Emily, what does this festival mean to you?
Well, I was drawn to the Queer Arts Festival because it's unlike anything I had access to growing up in a small town. Since art can be used as a tool for activism and social change, I wanted to be involved with an organization that's making space for queer artists to interact and showcase their work and tell their stories. What about you, Nikita?
For myself, I look at this festival through a decolonial lens, as queer art works to disrupt and resist imposed Western colonial ideas around the gender binary and heteronormativity. It is through the work of many of these artists that I can actually see myself being represented as an active Indigenous woman.
Well, this is the 10th year of the Queer Arts Festival. It will be our first experience attending. Throughout history, ongoing settler colonialism and heteropatriarchy have influenced the art world. These systemic barriers have ensured that only certain types of art and artists have been given the resources and opportunities to have their art be showcased and validated, while others have not. By engaging queer artists across disciplines, this year's festival theme, Decadence, aims to showcase resistance and voices that have historically been overlooked.
To start off this conversation, we're going to be speaking to Samantha Nock, who is a Métis writer and was the literary curator for last year's Queer Arts Festival Unsettled. So first off, could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Samantha Nock. I am Cree Métis. I grew up in Treaty 8 territory in northeastern BC, Dawson Creek, Fort St. John area. But my family comes from Alacrosse or Sikidawak in northern Saskatchewan.
So what did it mean for you to curate the Two-Spirit Literary Show at last year's festival?
Curating, it was really funny because when I went for the first initial meeting, it used to be the Queer Erotica Night, which I was told was like a kinky porn night, when I'm like, that's sick, but like, duh, I'm the wrong person for that. Like, I am so bashful, I will just die. But then I had some really good talks with like SD and folks, and it was really cool to work with different queer and two-spirit artists and writers and hear their take on what Indigenous erotica was. And it was a lot less like kinky porn night and like way more like poetic and beautiful. It was really nice. It was really reaffirming.
Many art festivals in the city don't include literature. So what makes this festival different through the inclusion of queer literature as a form of art?
I don't know why other festivals don't include literature. I think people don't view literature and writing as an art form. But I think especially when you get into things like poetry and prose, it can be really cool and really artistic and super creative. Not that like other forms of literature aren't creative. So I think it was really interesting to see queer arts incorporated into the fest, just because it's such a different avenue of expressing, of artistic expression. And I think a really like personal one, because people are performing. And it kind of turns, when you're reading your poetry or you're reading your prose, it turns into almost like a performance art piece. So Shane Sable, who is this really rad person, and they're a part of Virago Nation, so like the all-Indigenous burlesque troupe, along with their poetry, they did a burlesque performance as they read. And so it was this really cool, like, meeting of poetry and this, like, really amazing performance. And so I think it just incorporated it into literature and a bit of performance art.
What do you feel is the impact of a festival like this one in terms of recentering the voices of Two-Spirit people and providing a space for reclaiming sexuality and identity?
I think last year, the because it was all Indigenous Two-Spirit and queer artists, I think it was really amazing to see so many cool queer and Two-Spirit Indigenous artists come together in the city and perform their art and see their art, because it wasn't so long ago where that wouldn't have been okay. Like, in terms of queer activism and politics, it's been so white-centered, but to actually hear the voices of Two-Spirit people be out there, be present, it was really amazing. And I think it was really community building for a lot of people, because I think it was the first time I've seen in a long time where people actually got to come together, because we've been also connected through the internet, good old Twitter, to actually all be in the same space with each other. It was really awesome.
So through our own research, we've noticed a lot of your work incorporates themes of body image and decolonization. So what would you say is the relationship between activism and art in your work? And when did you start using poetry as a form of activism?
That's a good question. I've never looked at my work as activist work. I have a really complicated relationship with activism and like terminology around being an activist. And I don't think I am. But I started writing. I write a lot about my body and decolonization and decolonial love and all this stuff, mostly because I was writing a little selfishly for myself, and writing about my body was a way for me to kind of form a relationship with my body that was more healthy and more loving, as opposed to the relationship I've had with my body as a fat person growing up was not that. It was really tough. And so writing about my body was a way for me to kind of write myself back into existence and kind of recenter myself. Of course, writing as a Métis person, and I'm very connected to my community, that all comes out in it. And a really cool thing that's happened as I've started writing and publishing is that I've got to find out what other people find in my poetry, which is really humbling and really amazing, because, I don't know, you'll put something out there with what you think it's about in your mind, and then someone comes back to you and it means something else for them, and it's really amazing to have that connection with people. But I've never thought about it as activism before.
So why do you think that this work is relevant right now? Both, I think, your work and in the larger scope of the Queer Arts Festival and last year's theme, Unsettled.
I think this recentering of queer and Two-Spirit Indigenous folks is really amazing, because even in our own communities, the importance of Two-Spirit people has been lost through colonization. So having avenues where Two-Spirit people are in the spotlight, are getting their stories told and heard and being celebrated, I think is really powerful and really reaffirming for folks. And there are so many amazing queer, trans, Two-Spirit writers. So there's like Gwen Benaway, who's this really amazing trans woman and Anishinaabe trans woman. And then there's Billy Ray Belcourt, who's an amazing Cree queer poet. And it's just so, I feel like in the last few years, there's been so many amazing queer poets coming out. which is probably a wrong term, but it's been so cool to see.
Thank you so much for coming to talk to us and for all the work that you're doing.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. This was great.
And could you tell us where people can go to find out more about you and your work?
Yeah, for sure. So I have a blog where I self-publish a lot of poetry on. It's just at halfbreedsreasoning.com. And I also have a Twitter. It's just at Sammy Marie. It's a wreck of my life, but...
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now we're going to be taking a short musical break and listening to Jeremy Dutcher, who is an Indigenous Toronto-based composer and vocal artist and will be performing at this year's festival.
Jeremy Dutcher is a classically trained operatic tenor who performs traditional songs of his ancestors in duet with century-old archival wax cylinder recordings that he rediscovered at the Canadian Museum of History. In an interview with CBC, Jeremy said that he makes music in order to preserve a severely endangered language for the Wolastoq people. This is Jeremy Dutcher's debut single, Honor Song. That was Jeremy Dutcher with Honor Song. Next, we are very excited to be speaking with Valerie D. Walker, who is curating the visual art exhibit for this year's Queer Arts Festival.
First off, Valerie, could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Valerie D. Walker. I am a transmedia artist, educator, and curator of the Queer Arts Festival for 2018. Decadence.
Your art incorporates things like analog and digital medias, including computational arts and gaming interfaces. Could you elaborate on why you use the mediums that you do?
I think most of all, I use the mediums that I do because they interest me. And to me, they're interconnected. I come at it mostly as a material fiber artist. I do a lot of natural dyeing, hand weaving, digital weaving with a jacquard loom. And it's very clear to me that computer technology is entirely based on feminine-derived material arts. The original computer is a loom. If you do a weaving pattern, you are basically making a program. It's code. And you can actually quickly put that into a computer and make whatever you want, a pattern or lights to control a dance, sound art. It's clear that that digital connection is deep within us. To me, anyways. It's a part of nature. And I really like taking digital art to the next level by showing that connection of materiality and the world around us. So I do engage with a lot of outdoor installations of digital art. I create large-scale immersive experiences that mix projections, audio, and tactile digital art, fabric art. I like creating huge amounts of labyrinth panels with natural dyes and then illuminating them with lights and sensors and having people go on a real physical journey.
So as the curator of this year's exhibit, how do you select pieces and artists, and what types of art are you drawn to?
For myself, when I work as a curator, I start a lot from the theme of the festival or the experience that I'm curating for. And this year's very interesting and very impactful theme because it's the 10th anniversary of Queer Arts Festival. It's also the 20th anniversary of Pride in Art, which is the underlying foundation that supports queer art and kind of got this whole ball rolling about 20 years ago. It's also a very interesting anniversary in, you know, for me as a queer artist of color, many people are reaching a certain point in their lives in the queer art world where they're passing on. And so there's a lot of loss of memory. We don't have institutional memory in queer art culture. It's very random. And so I really focused on the idea of decades and the spiral of time. And I do like labyrinths a lot. So it's a journey that gets you to somewhere special. And a lot of people have been on that journey with us for a really long time. And maybe they're here, maybe they're not here anymore, but they left residues of their presence with their work. And so I'm looking for those stirring moments when I see the work. I want to feel those stirring moments of time. I want to feel that energy, excitement, pleasure in pure joy of queer sexuality being out there in the open. And yeah, there's a lot of pain involved in that too, so sometimes that's come up in some of the work, but it has to have a mix of the striking, you just kind of rip you out of your chest moment when you see it. And when I go, I know it's going to be in the show.
To build on the previous question, how are you engaging with the theme of time?
I've been in dialogue with a lot of the artists about that, and some are very new, young artists, and some are artists who've been around for a much longer time. They're at the kind of high point after 40 or 50 years in their careers. And it's interesting how each of them give me echoes of the same feeling about how important it is that there were people before them that they could look to who at some point in their career as an artist taught them something or opened a door for them in possibilities. And I find that really interesting, that that's a constant in our evolution as artists, people, queers trying to gain presence in the world. And that's come up a lot. So I think it'll be quite interesting to see in the festival if people see that. For example, we have Carl Pope, who's a very mature artist. He has a huge show in Madrid right now and in Abu Dhabi in the fantastic art world that's there. And he's come to me with work that he's been taking from the very beginning of his career as he went on journeys as a queer black man in the world. And so he has these like gigantic Polaroid-ish snapshots in very monochromatic color that talk about places that were important for him and for many other people, and many of them don't even exist anymore. But we're going to create this rainbow of time and place and illuminate the people that he knows and that were present at that time.
So what does it mean to you to be engaging with queer art in our current political climate?
Yeah. I guess a lot of it is thinking about what kind of confrontational space we're going to occupy, because it's clear it's confrontational, putting queer art out there in the public, celebrating queer sexuality, and doing it really proudly and shamelessly. So I think there's a point that I reached as the curator where I would say to people, I want you to give me the most shocking things that you've been afraid to show. It's time to show them. It's really time to get everything out in the open, start talking, and, you know, if people want to think about how crazy the things are we do in private, well, maybe we'll show them in public and talk about it. Yeah.
So one last question for you. Where can people learn more about you and what's next for you as far as your own work?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was going to say, first, I want people to go to the Queer Arts Festival webpage and apply for the community show, which the call is open right now. And this is part of the collective history of the Queer Arts Festival, is there's been always a community art show that is completely uncurated. And if you submit, you will be able to show your work, which is fantastic. So please submit to that. And it's going to be in the same roundhouse building as the curated festival, just in a more public space. So that'll be great for people. I'm really excited to see that work, too. To see more about my work, you could go to my website, valeriedwalker.com. And I also have a website that's a lot of my performative solar power installation and radio work that I've been collaborating with Bobby Kosnick, one of the more major transmedia artists in Canada. And that's at soucs.com, Souks. It's our solar USB charging culture station. But at our last show at the Surrey Art Gallery, I was in a great group show there, Ground Signals. You can see a lot of the work online. We realized the name of our project has evolved to Save Our Universal Climate Control System, Earth. And so I want people to really take away from it. A lot of my art practice is about doing things that improve the Earth. So just think about that every day. What do you do today that improved the Earth a little bit? Don't use as much plastic. I don't know. But I think there's a lot of things we can do. And supporting each other in our differences and standing down a lot of right-wing dogma might be a good thing to do, too.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us and your knowledge.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me for the interview.
So, Emily, when is the Queer Arts Festival taking place?
This year, the festival will take place at the Roundhouse Community Arts and Recreation Center and will run from June 16th to June 28th. You can visit queerartsfestival.com for more information. We would like to thank everyone that helped make this podcast possible. Thank you to the Pride and Arts Society for giving us the opportunity to do this project. And we would especially like to thank our amazing mentor, Emily Bailey, and the artists Valerie D. Walker and Samantha Nock for sharing their time and insight with us, as well as Jeremy Dutcher for his music.
Lastly, we would like to thank the Musqueam people, whose traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands we are broadcasting from today.
Yeah.
Okay.
In case
one,
we do.
One, two, three.
Thank you for listening, and see you at the 2018 Queer Arts Festival.
Timber Concerts presents the return of Flemish Eye recording artist Preoccupations on Wednesday, May 9th at the Astoria. Preoccupations are touring in support of their latest album, New Material, which is available now. You can get tickets and more information at preoccupationsband.com.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
Squint our eyes, we squint our eyes. park the truck under train station lights. I'll grab my bag and then we say goodbye. Oh, how you've grown, oh, how you've grown. We squint our eyes, we squint our eyes. How are we to know? 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 How are we to know?
Listening to Unceded Airwaves. The time is 2:39. The song you just heard was Sundogs by Tara Williamson. Before that, you heard a podcast made by Indigenous Collective member Nikita Day and Emily Irvine about the Queer Arts Festival happening this spring, June 16th to 28th, here in Vancouver. Next, we have a podcast made by our very own Autumn about Indigenous feminisms featuring Dori Nason and Crystal Fraser. And here it is.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people and around the world at CITR.ca. Vanguizi, Autumn Schnell-Vilji, Chief Jim Kui, Jana Kui Shedeji, Jacqueline Kui Shedeji. My name is Autumn Schnell. I am Treaty 11 Gwich'in and Inuvialuit on my mother's side, and I am of settler German descent on my father's side. For this radio documentary, we are going to be exploring Indigenous feminisms and what that means not only to me, but as to most Indigenous, queer, two-spirit bodies that are navigating this space. So I would say this project for me started about over a year ago now, when one of my high school teachers told me that Indigenous feminism didn't exist. So I would say that's where the praxis of this project came from. And that really challenged me. It kind of challenged who I was as a human being, the devotion that I had to feminism, what I wanted and thought that I knew, and how I thought I was going to say it. Yeah, so the definition for me, I would say I started just by Googling feminism. This definition was not enough. It was missing something. There were holes in it. First of all, it uses the word sexes, which is inherently problematic. But it also kind of didn't encapsulate the nuance that I had associated with feminism previously. It didn't account for Indigenous feminism, which is what we're going to be discussing, but it didn't really account for ableism. It didn't really account for like Marxist feminism. It didn't account for any of the waves. It didn't really account for any of the nuance that I associated with feminism previously. My own personal research started with that, and it continued on with my interview with Crystal Fraser, which I will be airing later. And my interview with Crystal Fraser really changed the way I saw feminism. She articulated the way that I saw the nuance of feminism, kind of debunked hegemonic settler sexualities, debunked hegemonic settler genderisms, all of the above. And so that changed the way I saw things. And then my research continued when I took FNIS, or First Nations and Indigenous Studies 100, here with Dr. Dori Nason, who I then decided to interview for this radio documentary later. This was one of my interests, I would say, coming into this. And my experience with Dr. Dori Nason was really lovely. She kind of talked about the history of feminism, where feminism exists now, where it started, the process of getting from where it started to where it is now. She talked about Zikala Shah, which I thought was really, really interesting. It was a great experience. So these are two really strong, empowered women, Crystal Fraser being Dinjuse, or Treaty 11 Gwich'in, which is my homeland. And then it continued on with Dr. Dori Nason, who is Anishinaabe and Chicana. So yeah, the first interview that we're going to be hearing is by Dr. Dori Nason, and we're going to be hearing and listening to what she has to say about feminism within the literary world and her own experiences, her problems, her challenges with feminism. So enjoy.
My name is Dory Nason. I'm a professor in First Nation Studies and the Department of English. My pronouns are she and her. I'm an Indigenous feminist, a scholar, a writer, and mostly I think about myself as an Anishinaabe woman and also a Chicano woman.
Do you consider yourself a feminist when you were younger? Like I remember my feminist origins was when I was like 12 and I was like, yeah, equality.
I think I always had my mom tells this story about me being 5 years old in the car and telling her that, you know, one, that I was going to be a professor, which I don't know how I heard of that.
Predicted.
I know. Like, I don't know how I came up with that. And that also that I found it really unfair that the way that girls were treated in the world. And, you know, I was never going to get married or change my name or do anything like that. And she was like, where is she getting all this stuff? So I think it was always, you know, kind of, I don't know where that came from, but I do know as a, you know, I had lots of strong women in my family. I think a lot of people say that who were also, I think I witnessed their mistreatment and the things that happened to them within family dynamics. And I think that was my justice orientation, was to want to deal with, quite frankly, intimate violence, domestic violence within seeing that growing up. So
That's really interesting. And then can you tell us what Indigenous feminism means to you? I know it's a very broad question.
Okay, so what does it mean to me? For me, as I said, my kind of academic journey and personal journey was intertwined around thinking about why forms of gender violence were so pervasive, whether it was overt violence that was, you know, physical or sexual assault, or just like everyday violences that you experience as a woman, and thinking about wanting that to change and be different and have people feel safe in their bodies or gender identity. And academically, you know, searching that out, trying to figure out like what is Indigenous feminism was actually kind of something that I'm still kind of thinking about. And as I said before, I don't like to define it because I think it always has to be attended to on the ground issues. And so it's going to look different at any given context, even for me in my own life. So right now I have a sense of it as a professor and an academic that Indigenous feminism is this kind of scholarship that's looking at these issues of violence and gender violence. But in terms of activists or personal experience, you know, it's a justice issue. And again, it's still kind of wrapped up in thinking about, you know, wanting the women that I know and love to be safe and to be like accepted in any way they express themselves.
Yeah. And then can you tell us a little bit about your research?
My research, I'm like laughing at all this stuff. My research is varied. And I think if you look at my little blurb on the FNIS website, it says something about Native women's intellectual traditions. And I think originally that was kind of my focus because I really wanted to excavate what are Native women's critiques of gendered colonialism. And that's outside of even the ways that we think about a feminist historiography or frame. So I'm really interested in early writers like Zakala Shaw or women who are writing at the, you know, in the 1800s or the turn of the, or in the 20th century, at the turn of the 20th century, for, you know, finding those kernels and stories of their experience and the ways that they understood colonialism to be gendered in a particular way towards them. So that's one part of it, and that's a more of a historical project. The other part of it is really just the more contemporary and fun stuff that I like to think about and write about and look for are the ways that different forms of art making are attempting these same kinds of critiques. And so thinking about media artists or, you know, visual artists, which I'm so not trained in, but I've become so excited about the ways that people like filmmakers like Maya Telfeathers or others are producing work that is so sophisticated in its critique and analysis that I see my research as holding those people up. So yeah. I often think of myself as a bit of a fraud because I'm like, I don't really do anything cool. I just point out cool people doing cool stuff.
Which is cool because not that most people don't do that. How are people ever going to find out about cool people doing cool things?
Yeah, well, like, I hope that's a good contribution. But but yeah, that's kind of the way I think about my research. So thinking about feminist art and practice, either contemporarily or finding these early voices that, you know, offered a critique.
How do you assist your students in learning about this subject?
That's a good question. Well, I have various opportunities either at the graduate level or the undergraduate level. You are in my introductory course in Native Studies or Indigenous Studies. And I also teach in Indigenous Feminism's fourth year seminar, which I'm doing right now. And so for different contexts, obviously, the approach changes. I do think Indigenous feminist scholarship and analysis at this point in time in critical Indigenous studies is one of the pillars of what we think about in terms of critical Indigenous studies. So I try to put that forward in the lower division courses. But in terms of thinking about Indigenous feminism in the upper division courses, I do try to think about how do we open up space for various people's engagement with the idea. And, you know, trying to make it as inclusive as possible, as I said, so that I don't create, one, a definition that everyone should follow, and two, to show that there's a wide range of diversity around the ways people think about this. So, you know, thinking about it outside of academic contexts, thinking about Jessica Yee's book, I'm going to forget the title, Feminism for Real, where she's kind of, she has a group of people write about, you know, when we think about Indigenous feminism, it's not necessarily happening in academic institutions. It's happening on the ground and in other spaces that are much more complicated about it and offer a different point of view. So I try to give a wide range of approaches.
And then can you tell us why Indigenous feminism is a crucial part of Indigenous studies, from your opinion, at
from
least?
My opinion. Because I want to make space for myself. No, because
I want to speak.
I think because, and I think Audra Simpson talks about this really well, as does Leanne Simpson, when we think about colonization, you can't afford to not have a gendered analysis.
The podcast that you just heard was made by me. It was called Indigenous Feminisms. And you can hear the full podcast as a part of the Carving Space in an Indigenous Radio Doc series on CATR 101.9 FM. The full podcast is 32 minutes long, and you can listen to it. It aired on Monday. So, be sure to check it out if you liked the first part.
The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival returns to Calgary from June 20th to 24th, 2018. Discover over 250 bands, comedy acts, film, and art in more than 35 venues across the city. This year's festival features guest curator Deerhoof, innovative indie rock act Dirty Projectors, electronic innovators Mount Kimby, versatile folk pop duo Way Oak, futuristic hip-hop titans Shabazz Palaces, outsider pop auteur John Mouse, and many more yet to be announced. Visit sledisland.com for details, travel deals, and to get your festival pass. Born out of an initiative to give more voice to local women artists and musicians, Mixtapes is a Vancouver-based biannual mixtape featuring women-identified musicians and sound artists from the Pacific Northwest. The Spring 2018 edition will be coming out on May 10th, with all proceeds going to the Downtown Eastside Women's Shelter. Women-identified artists are invited to send their submissions to btchtapes@gmail.com. The release fundraiser will be held on May 10th at the Redgate Review Stage, featuring artists selected for this edition of the cassette.
wrong. I know that you were right, but I just want it all. And you and I are flawed.
Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to our guests, Dory Nason, Crystal Fraser, Nikita Day, Emily Irvine, Emily D. Bailey, Sam Nock, Jerry Dutcher, and everyone else who was involved in the podcast creation for all of your contributions to CITR. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Norad Electric and Decolonizing Water. The next show that you'll hear is Cue It Up. My name is Autumn Schnell.
My name is Mel Habrill.
And I'm Madison Singh, signing out from Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM.